6:05 here on a Wednesday. Good to have you. As the sun peeks out over downtown Detroit, Lloyd Jackson, good morning.
Good morning, sir. It's Wednesday hump day.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Hump day!
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle, man.
Right in the middle.
Yes, sir.
I love it. We got a lot to talk about today. And, you know, this these teen takeovers have certainly, they've colored the way that people are talking about big events.
Yes.
Not just here in the city of Detroit.
Oh,
all over
the
country.
Yes.
Right? Obviously, with the World Cup happening right now, security's heightened in a lot of these big cities where these games are being held. So everybody's just kind of leery of these events and just trying to keep everybody happy,
mm-hmm.
right? Making
mm-hmm.
sure everybody's safe, making sure everybody's able to enjoy the festivities while also making sure that everybody's behaving properly. And that's even happening here in Detroit.
Absolutely. Detroit City Council has approved an 8 p.m. fireworks curfew for teenagers. The emergency ordinance passed on a 6-2 vote and targets unaccompanied minors 17 and under during Monday's Ford fireworks. Now, youth are still welcome at designated viewing areas like Hart Plaza and Belle Isle, but only if they are accompanied by an adult age 21 or older. Detroit police say the measure is strictly for safety following past instances of gun violence. Minors caught violating the curfew will be taken to a recreation center, and their parents will face a $250 fine. Now, we'll be talking to Tony Michaels in the 6 o'clock hour. And also we'll be talking to the Chief Todd Bettison in the 7 o'clock hour.
Yeah. And I think this notion that Detroit is unsafe is, I just push back against that completely.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the big events we've had in the past, the NFL draft, I mean, look at all the people that were down. There was no issues
right
down there during the draft.
Right.
You know, when we had Super Bowl, when we had those things, there was nothing going on. So the Detroit police and our partners across the region mm-hmm. who all come in and help, they know what they're doing and they know what to do.
Yeah. No, I'm okay with even putting this curfew in place.
Absolutely.
I got no problem with it.
No.
I got no problem with it. But I think this idea of, oh, do I really want to go down there with these teen take? No. Everything's cool.
Yep. You're good.
Everything's cool.
You'll be fine.
But we will talk about it.
Yeah.
Also, this attack that was apparently planned at this UFC event at the White House, federal agents disrupted an alleged plot to target high-profile figures at the UFC event at the White House. That's according to the FBI and Secret Service. Authorities said the plan involved multiple suspects, reportedly around 23 people involved in this. Some now are in custody after a coordinated multi-state investigation. Court documents show a complex attack scenario in which conspirators intended to fly explosive-laden drones over the event and use snipers to target people fleeing the area.
Wow.
Now I will tell you, this was the one of the main focuses for big events,
mm-hmm.
for leagues like the NFL, where you've got big outdoor stadiums.
Sure.
They are worried about drones. They are worried about nefarious actors
uh-huh.
putting something on a drone and then dropping it in a place where it's a highly concentrated, you know, group of people.
Just something else that the authorities have to deal with now because of the technology and the times we're in.
Now, you had officials saying that this was neutralized before it could start, thankfully, because of the security measures that were put in place.
Sure.
And these investigations that are certainly ongoing, we don't have the full details
mm-hmm.
of them yet. But even yesterday, Donald Trump said he hadn't even been briefed at the time on this threat yet. So Secret Service keeping everything kind of close to the vest, FBI keeping things kind of close to the vest, and the investigation is ongoing. But a potentially catastrophic event that was thwarted by the good work of law enforcement.
Nearly 4 out of 10 parishes in the Archdiocese of Detroit are running budget deficits. According to an exclusive report in this morning's Detroit News, 39% of local parishes faced shortfalls last fiscal year. Archdiocese data reveals a combined $18 million in debt, $94 million in unfunded maintenance for aging buildings. Officials say declining attendance has directly squeezed collection plate revenues while operating costs continue to climb. The financial strain is the primary driver behind a major ongoing restructuring plan, which will ultimately decide which local churches will stop holding Mass.
Mm. It's going to impact a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to impact a lot of people. And this is, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, people leaving the church.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the Catholic Church, no, but faith as a whole.
Faith as a whole, right.
And for many years, that trend was on the downward trajectory. Well, now things kind of seemed like they were picking back up. People were going back to faith. People were trying to find their way back to the church,
yes,
or God,
mm-hmm,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really positive sign. The point is, though, is it too late?
Oh,
you know, these churches, are, if they don't have the money to operate, well, what do? You start consolidating. You start taking away certain times for services or masses.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, those people that were making a concerted effort to come back all of a sudden find themselves with gaps in their,
yes,
in their worship. So that's something you don't want to see. But obviously, it's something to ponder and wonder how we keep this thing going,
mm-hmm,
when people want it.
Want it? Yeah. Yeah. A gas station near Detroit Metro Airport under state investigation for alleged price gouging after a Michigan Attorney General's office staffer paid $5.24 per gallon for fueling during an April 9th purchase in Romulus, more than a dollar higher than nearby stations the same day. Attorney General Dana Nessel's office says it has now been granted court authority in Wayne County and issued subpoenas as part of a broader probe into repeated consumer complaints. Investigators say prices at the BP station on Middle Belt Road have ranged 22 to 72% higher than competitors. The station has been investigated before, including a separate case back in 2023. State officials say they will continue monitoring pricing as the investigation moves forward.
Mm-hmm.
$5.24?
I don't know.
And the other stations
That is the definition of price gouging.
Oh, yeah. And the other stations are a dollar cheaper?
Right.
What are you doing?
No. No. Did you see Lionel Messi, by the way, yesterday?
Yes.
3 goals. He now holds the record for World Cup scoring.
Wow.
In the World Cup. Yeah. I mean, just that. Now, some of those goals were, you know, he had a rebound on one of them.
Okay.
You know, some of them were, but hey, I mean,
a goal is a goal, right?
His first goal was off the charts, outside the box, just an absolute ripper into the corner. And Argentina wins. But go ahead.
No, I got another something I wanted to say.
Okay.
So just finish what you were saying
Are you into the World Cup at all?
I've been watching it more than I usually do, Chris.
All right. I'm going to make the case for you at some point. I'm going to make the case for you.
Okay.
Dude, I am all in.
I see.
All in. I love it.
And Tigers manager AJ Hinch announced that Justin Verlander is going to be making his return Father's Day.
How about that?
Isn't that nice?
Must see JV. He's back, baby.
Yes.
Yay! Speaking of the Tigers, they lost yesterday 4-2. They gave up three runs in the eighth inning.
Mm.
And they ended up losing that game. Framber Valdez, look, I'll take this, Jace. I'll take an outing like that from him.
Yeah, yeah.
Six hits, one run, three walks, six strikeouts.
That ball was dancing out of his hand, too.
Yes, but it was.
Once again, like I always say, no offense.
No offense.
The back it up.
No, you know, the bats come and the bats go.
Bats go. Get that tattooed on your forehead.
Right.
Coming up on the other side, Steve Mitchell with a new poll out. Boy, this GOP primary race for governor, pretty close. We'll talk about it next. It's JR Morning. So this new poll from Mitchell Research.
Yeah.
John James and Mike Cox in a statistical dead heat.
Dude.
I mean, look. At one point, I think everybody thought that John James was going to be the candidate running away.
He was running away with it.
But Mike Cox has really turned on the Jets here, and the survey suggests that this tie is showing that there is real competition,
mm-hmm,
on the Republican side, where maybe there wasn't at one point.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
It didn't look like it, but now the numbers are becoming a little more clear here in June. Which
people
is,
are paying attention. August will be here in 5 minutes.
Absolutely. Let's talk about it. Steve Mitchell, the president and CEO of Mitchell Research Communications, joins us to talk about it. Steve, good morning. It's good to have you back.
And it's wonderful to be back with you guys.
All right, so let's talk about it. The statistical dead heat. What are the margins here? And how much momentum or movement, I should say, is that from the last poll for Mike Cox?
In the last poll, we had the race really still a big lead for John James. We had John James at about 31%. We had both Mike Cox as well as Johnson down at about 19 or 20%. And this time we see some real movement. What happened really in this race is right now the race is 28% for John James, 27% for Mike Cox. And then of course, Johnson's down at about 23%. So he's also in the race. But what happened is John James went off the air for about a month. He didn't do any advertising. And when that happens in a political campaign, voters begin to forget who the candidates are. At the same time, Mike Cox was on the air for that entire period, spending about maybe $500,000 a week getting his name ID higher. And as a result of that, he picked up 7 or 8 points, and the race became very, very close. It really is a three-way race, but right now the momentum certainly seems to be with Mike Cox, and I see that the John James went back up again on the air. He's going to be advertising again, so this is going to be an interesting race to follow all the way down to the wire. It depends on who can do the best job and who can get their message over the best to the voters, and that's going to decide on who's going to be the ultimate Republican nominee.
Also, Eric Nesbitt has struggled to gain traction in this poll. Is this simply a matter of name recognition, or is there something deeper happening within the Republican base?
I think in terms of Eric Nesbitt, Eric's a great candidate. He's been working very hard, but I think he's been off the air during that period as well. He's got less money than the other candidates, and I think he's reserving his money to spend at the end. There's still a lot of voters who have to make up their mind. And I think you'll see all of them working very hard between now and August to get their name ID up. But it's really a close race right now. At one time, John James had a 35% lead over the rest of the field, and that lead has now diminished rather dramatically.
Well, this is why we always talk about money winning elections, right?
Yes, right.
when you've got the bank account that you can actually go ahead and not take those months off, like you mentioned. I guess I'm wondering, based on your history, if there is movement like this where, you know, and we can make the argument, are these voters that are just moving towards Mike Cox? Are these voters moving away from John James? Or is these undecided voters that are finally picking a stake in this race? That can be up for debate. But is it harder to regain folks that maybe you lost if you're somebody like John James, maybe somebody who moved over towards Mike Cox at this point? Is it harder to get them back than retain them throughout a campaign like this?
One of the objectives of any campaign is once you go up on the air, stay on the air all the way through to the end. That way you do keep them. And I think that's a very good question you ask. Do you keep these people or do they come back to you? Often you'll see voters who forgot about the fact that John James was their candidate, hop back in again. But at the same time, as the new candidate, in this case Mike Cox, gains more momentum, then he's got an opportunity to try to keep those people as well. So I suspect you'll see all of the candidates, including Perry Johnson, stay on the air all the way through now until August. And it looks to me like it's going to be coming a very close race with a three-way field, but Mike Cox certainly seems to have the momentum at this point.
Steve, your poll also shows strong approval ratings for President Trump among Republican voters. Does that make an endorsement potentially decisive, or are Michigan Republicans just already locked into their choices?
We've asked the question before whether or not the endorsement means a lot. It is unbelievable, as we see in almost every state. If President Trump were to endorse in this race, I believe whoever Trump endorsed would be the nominee. We saw that back in 2022. Tudor Dixon was doing well. Then she got the endorsement of Donald Trump, and she just soared after that. Thing would happen here. It doesn't.
Oh, you know what? We got a bad
involved in this race.
Yeah, we got a bad connection with you, Steve. Do you want to just try to wrap that up in a nutshell one more time?
Yes, close race. 28 for John James, 27% for for Mike Cox and 23% for Perry Johnson. Close race coming up.
It's like the Derby. we're watching it closely. Steve Mitchell, thank you. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll talk again very soon.
You know, and you know, Perry's got plenty of money. He's been spending a lot of money. He's been on TV constantly, you know, and he's still, you know, number three there, but he's still, you know, he's in striking distance. I mean, you know.
Well, I thought you brought up a good point with the approval rating amongst Republicans for Donald Trump, right? He is going to loom on this, whether he makes an endorsement or not,
right?
Whatever it is, he looms large over
this. Yes,
yes. These elections, midterm elections, are always about turnout.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yep.
And if you can invigorate your base enough to get up, get to the polls on a non-presidential year, you're going to do well.
Yeah.
His support hasn't waned as significantly as others maybe would hope it would have with everything going on,
exactly,
being Donald Trump. But if you can get Republicans to come out and vote,
right,
they have a shot. Absolutely.
Especially in August during summertime when people are usually out vacationing and doing
no things. Doubt about it. Yeah. More coming up. Get you caught up on some of the national headlines. It's Chair Morning. Well, you just heard it right there. The 2026 Ford Fireworks presented by the parade company is coming.
Yeah.
Monday.
We'll be here Monday.
I've told our next guest a couple of different times, he has absolutely ruined fireworks for my children because no other fireworks display.
It does not match it.
Compares to what Tony Michaels and his team put together, and the president and CEO of the parade company joins us this morning. Tony, it's good to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be on. We're getting close.
We are
getting close.
We are getting close. What is this time like for you and your team as you get, you know, within a couple of days here?
Well, there's so many moving parts. You know, of course, the show is in the can. I did the music, you know, months ago, and I'm working with Patrick Barreau. The choreography is done. They're loading up the barges right now over by Zug Island, three big barges. But then there's the party that we put on with, you know, 2,300 people, the fundraiser. WDIV's broadcast live from there. WJR broadcasting live from there. Food all night, things for the kids. It just doesn't stop. It's like constant. And then, you know, of course, all of the public relations. And, you know, you heard about the curfew yesterday.
Right.
That's great. We're off and running there. But you know what? It's all about positive now. It's all about, this is one of the largest events in the state of Michigan, and it's time for us to really celebrate our city and celebrate our state. And we couldn't be prouder at the parade company with great sponsors, Ford Motor Company, with Mary Culler, president of Ford Philanthropy, the Ford family. I mean, they get behind us in so many ways. And even that rooftop fundraiser is presented by Ford helping us out, and so many others, guys. It's just, we're so fortunate. And we really, really, really take this stuff seriously because these events are owned by the people. It's our job to make them great. It really is.
Tony, as you mentioned, the city council approved that 8 p.m. curfew for unaccompanied minors on the night of the fireworks, and some critics argue the curfew could discourage young people from attending. But Detroit police, they say that this is about safety, not exclusion. Do you believe the curfew strikes that right balance between creating a welcoming event and protecting the public?
Oh, without question, without question. I mean, how many people, you know, actually allow their 13, 14-year-old kids to go pretty much anywhere without adult supervision? I think that this is absolutely the right decision. And the thing is, it's been in place for years.
Right.
This is nothing new. And it's a good thing. And let's just make sure everyone has a great time. And I will tell you this. I was with Police Chief Todd Bettison last evening, and they are just so committed to all of these events, whether it was techno or the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix and now the Ford Fireworks, and it just continues. So their commitment doesn't change, and they are so excited to show America how Detroit can do something really well.
Well, and again, it just keeps the momentum up, right?
It does.
You've got a ton of people that come down there. Everybody's rowing in the same direction. There are I'd love to find another person that is as good of a salesman for the state of Michigan or the city of Detroit as Tony Michaels and all the hard work that you do behind the scenes to get this thing done and off the ground, literally. or I suppose off the river.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work, and we want as many people to enjoy it as safely as possible.
Oh, absolutely. And we want people to come down. I mean, last year we had massive crowds, massive. And, you know, sometimes the weather is a deterrent. What we're hearing right now is there's going to be some rain in the morning, and it all clears up midday. So, you know, very rarely, how many cities have what we have? When you think about all of these events, everything that we have in the city of Detroit is the best there is. Whether it's the Detroit Jazz Festival, the world's largest free jazz festival with all those amazing acts, the techno, and I mentioned the Chevrolet Grand Prix in downtown Detroit.
Right.
I mean, we need to be proud of these things, and that needs to be the narrative 100% of the time. And Todd Bettison and his team at DPD and all of the other law enforcement people, the Michigan State Police and Border Security and everybody, they want what you want. They want what the people want, and they're there to ensure that that happens. That's a great feeling. It really is.
Tony, the Four Fireworks has become one of the premier fireworks displays in North America, we know, and it just continues to stand out from the other fireworks across the country. If you're still on the fence about attending this year's event next Monday, what's the Tony Michaels pitch for why you just can't miss this Detroit tradition?
You don't get to see this anywhere. I do believe Washington, D.C. this year, because of the 250, is going to be one massive show. Beyond that, we are right there, and then next year we'll be right back in the one slot. You want to see this. I can tell you, in working with Patrick Burrow, Zambelli, what we've got planned here is bigger than life. It is massive. And how often do you get to see anything like this? And come down and take it in. And they just, the city, Mayor Sheffield said, let's broaden up this footprint a little bit. And they're opening up Irma Henderson Park closer to the east side.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Hart Plaza opens up at 2 o'clock. When it's full, it's full. Belle Isle, the cars can start rolling over at 2 o'clock. They'll take 2,000 cars, and that happens by 5 o'clock. After that, you can walk over the Belle Isle Bridge. But another piece of this, guys, is we're going back to WJR, broadcasting not only the Paul W. Smith Show, prior to with all the great interviews from the fundraiser, but you're going to have the music.
Yeah.
We urge people, when you're anywhere, take your radios, take your boom boxes, take whatever you need, and turn that music on, because this show is choreographed right to the music. And it's pretty cool, because other cities will just play, you know, a whole song, and they'll just play a whole song, and there'll be maybe six of them.
Yeah.
We bounce around, and it's going to be pretty exciting. It really is.
Well, and kudos to the people who put that thing together, right, Tony?
Yeah.
The playlist.
Well, yeah. My wife gets a little crazy. It's on the kitchen island for a while. I keep moving it around, and I just want to hit every genre, and I want everyone to feel great about whether it's Motown, country, rock and roll. You know, when somebody has recently passed away, you're going to hear some surprises there.
Sure.
So we just try to make it great. And I have the greatest team in the world, and we have the greatest support. You know, and I mentioned Ford, but, you know, we also have Mott Children's Hospital and Rocket and DTE and Blue Cross Blue Shield in Michigan with Trisha Keith and her team. And we're just very fortunate.
And Tony, the volunteers as well. You can't leave them out.
Oh. No, they're phenomenal. We have 2,000 volunteers who do something with us through the year. We have hundreds of them for this event, and they are so excited. They really are. These are great people, and you'll find these people at the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, you know, working for Bud Denker, Michael Montri, and you'll see them everywhere.
Yeah.
They are the greatest people in our city. They're phenomenal. And we're so fortunate. We really are.
Well, we can't wait. Can't wait for Paul to be broadcasting down there. We will be airing everything here on WJR as well, as you mentioned. So make sure you tune in for that. Tony Michaels, always appreciate catching up. We'll talk again very soon. Can't wait for Monday.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. That's Tony Michaels at the parade company.
And we'll be talking to the Detroit Police Chief in the 7 o'clock hour about the curfew.
The curfew.
And what the plans are
for
that night.
Yep. Coming up on the other side, auto shops and dealerships running low on motor oil and paint and other products because of what's happening in Iran. Hopefully we're coming to an end there. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about the ramifications next on JR Morning. So President Donald Trump right now meeting with the president of Egypt at the G7, kind of running over a couple of things, talking about the memorandum of understanding. He said, you know, not everybody knows exactly what's in it, but it is a good deal and it is going to lead to Iran not having a nuclear program and a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
He also talked a little bit about what his plans are for today. He's going to be heading to Paris, having dinner there, and then he's going to fly back to the United States. But one of the things that we've seen in an interesting piece out of Auto News is that because of the ongoing disruptions out of Iran that have strained global supply chains, like we've heard obviously about gas,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That has been the number one thing.
Number
but we've
one.
Heard about fertilizer.
Yes, right.
That has been a huge impact
for the
farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other key things that we have seen a shortage of is, for example, motor oil and paint and other sort of service products that would impact auto repair shops and dealerships, particularly, of course, here in the Detroit area as well. There are persistent shortages. And just because the Strait of Hormuz, as the president just mentioned a moment ago, could be opened fully within the next day or two,
mm-hmm.
that we are, you know, it's not like flipping a switch. There's still going to be some
time. Yes.
for these products to get where they need to go. Dan Shine is the senior editor overseeing finance and insurance services and parts and used car coverage for Automotive News and joins us this morning to talk about it. Dan, good morning. Good to have you back.
Great. Good to be with you.
What are some of the main issues that dealerships and these auto repair shops are working with at this moment?
Well, mostly it's constrained supply. It's more expensive supply. So the bigger dealerships aren't really having much of an impact. They've got big tanks and they can, you know, they can top off their tanks and kind of wait this out. But they're paying higher prices, which means you're going to pay a higher price. The smaller shops, maybe a single mom and pop auto repair shop might, you know, are having more difficulty probably finding supply. And what they do get, again, is going to be more expensive, which means they typically are going to pass it on to the consumer.
Then for the average driver, should there be any concern about using an alternative oil grade when recommended by the manufacturer?
Not in the short term for, you know, one oil change.
Yeah.
Maybe two. It won't affect, it'll affect your how far you go on a gallon of gas, your fuel economy. But other than that, it won't be much of an impact. It won't damage your engine. I know that, you know, the folks who trademark and, you know, for engine quality are, you know, trying to get the big manufacturers like GM and all the other automakers to kind of let them use maybe a little bit lower grade
mm-hmm.
Synthetic oil for the time being and not have any kind of warranties voided or, you know, still have that kind of that check mark that there's still a quality oil being used in your vehicle.
Could this shortage eventually kind of lead to maybe some longer wait times or, you know, for routine maintenance and repairs at dealerships?
It could. I mean, we're not there yet. And I know you were just talking about how maybe the Strait of Hormuz opens tomorrow. Gas prices will have a more immediate effect. But synthetic oils, I was talking with a distributor in Houston yesterday who supplies synthetic oils and lubricants and other fluids, like transmission fluid, to dealerships around the country. And it's actually a global organization. And he said it's, you know, if all goes well and everything opens up and the peace holds, it'll still be into early 2027 before synthetic motor oil markets normalize. It's just it rebounds slower than gas prices.
It's
going to take people to work through their supplies.
Yeah, certainly. It does seem to show a weak spot in the chain here for the auto industry, particularly here in Detroit, obviously for us. But these issues, because of their persistence, how do these dealerships, you know, try to avoid this in the future? Is there a way for them to prepare for something like this?
I just think you're staying on top of global political geopolitical issues. You have to, I guess you talk to your supplier and they're kind of the canary in the coal mine, and they'll often be able to tell you, there's trouble brewing. Or, for instance, during the war, there are three main facilities in the Middle East that produce what they call a group three base oil that makes synthetic motor oil. And one of them was damaged in the war. So one of them's offline. How badly? Nobody knows. When it's going to be back online? Nobody knows. So that's, constrain supply for the months down the road.
If you're in your vehicle right now listening and, somebody's on their way to work or the market or whatever, what's the smartest thing you can do to stay ahead of, any potential service disruptions without overreacting?
Well, I think if your vehicle's due for an oil change, in the next month or so, I would maybe schedule a little bit early just to get in and make sure you get in I'm not going to say a decent price, but a price that's probably lower than it would be 2 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not much you can do. It's if you need, a transmission flush or you need an oil change, you're going to have it done. And those products are, you'll be able to find them if it's, maybe if it's not at your local, corner oil change place, you can find it at others. So there's still a supply. It's just constrained, and that means the price goes up, and that means everybody pays more.
Interesting stuff. We appreciate your time and insight, as always. Dan Shine at Automotive News, thanks for your time. We'll talk again soon.
Sure, appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. But he's right. The crunch and the squeeze on some of these products are greater than what we're seeing in the oil markets. I mean, gas prices are down pretty significantly.
Oh, man, they're coming down.
I mean, I think I saw $3.69 in my neck of the woods. Brent crude down to $78 today, which is down. But most of these markets on oil are right around, they haven't passed $80.
No.
So they're down pretty significantly.
And they have been as high as like $120 at one time.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So things are starting to level out on that front a little bit, which is good news. We'll take a break, get you caught up on the headlines coming up next 7 o'clock hour. Also, this explosion of deep fake political ads, it has been brewing for a long time. How much of an impact is this going to have come this next election or even in the next presidential election? We'll talk about it. JR Morning. 7:05 here on a Wednesday. Good to have you here on JR Morning. And here's your chance to win a trip to go see Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind & Fire in the city of your choice. We've got flights, hotel, concert tickets, and premium VIP lounge access covered. It's your chance to sing along all night long with Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind & Fire. Prize provided by Live Nation. Texas Hours National keyword, night. To 95819. That's NIGHT to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. Play four times each weekday for four chances to win. Official rules and more are at WJR.com. So the Detroit City Council took some action yesterday as it pertains to what we will see light up the skies next Monday for the fireworks, the Ford fireworks, brought on by the parade company.
Yeah, 8 p.m. curfew now for teenagers on fireworks day. The emergency ordinance passed in a 6-2 vote targets unaccompanied minors 17 and under during the fireworks. Youth are still welcome at designated viewing areas like Hart Plaza and Belle Isle, but only if they're accompanied by an adult age 21 or older. Detroit police say the measure is strictly for safety following past instances of gun violence, and minors caught violating the curfew be taken to a recreation center, and then their parents will be called, and they will face a $250 fine. This curfew has been done every year, I think.
For the fireworks.
For the fireworks.
Yeah.
And I just think it's getting more attention this year because of the teen takeovers that have taken place downtown and across the country, as a matter of fact. And so I think it's getting more attention. But this is something that happens every year.
Standard run-of-the-mill procedure.
Standard run-of-the-mill, yeah.
I mean, again, who's letting their 13-year-old kid walk around downtown going to the fireworks?
Come on. 10 o'clock at night, fireworks going on, and you just drop your kid off downtown and say, okay, see you later. No.
I don't know. Look, no. As a parent to young kids, mm-hmm. you obviously went through it.
Yes.
Would you let your kids go downtown at 14 way. By themselves?
No way.
No way.
No way. Just wouldn't happen.
I mean, Jake turns 8 in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
8. Mm-hmm. Like, no, he's not quite old enough yet.
Yeah.
But, like, I've even debated on this idea of, like, do I, run to CVS, which is a mile down the road? Like, could I leave him alone and just let him be? Now, he would get into nothing.
Yeah.
He is he's just like, I'm going to watch YouTube. And it's like, he'll be stuck to YouTube.
Yeah, right.
For those five minutes that I'm gone.
Yeah.
But no.
But no, you still can't. No.
No.
I get it.
Yeah. No. No, 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 no. So, I, again, it's getting more play, to your point, because of what's been happening.
Yeah.
But this is not out of the ordinary.
It is not out of the ordinary. The police know what they're doing downtown. We've had fireworks before. We've had all these big events downtown, the draft, the Grand Prix. It's safe. Come out. Enjoy those fireworks. Because let me tell you what Tony Michaels told me. And we had him on earlier. And if you want to hear that interview, you can go to WJR.com. But he told me, he says, this is going to be so great, you're going to cry. And you're going to have a heart attack.
That's what he said.
I said, what? I said, really? He said, yeah.
Say like, what?
Basically, that's what's going to happen. He says, you're going to laugh. You're going to cry.
I love it.
And then you're going to have a heart attack.
He's going to take us through the range of emotions.
Yes.
Well, that's why this is the best fireworks display in the country.
Oh, it is. And every year, Chris, I say, Tony, this is so great. How do you top it? And
I
do it every year.
I
the Zambellis are the best. When
they're mad geniuses. I told them, I said, you've ruined fireworks for my kids. We went to another fireworks display after we went to the Detroit fireworks display last year,
uh-huh.
And they're like
yawning.
Oh, I'm like, what do you? This is still okay. And they're like, nah. It ain't the same. And I'm like, all right, fair. I mean, it's certainly not.
No,
it's not. This is just over a little lake. Here we are, But they're like, yeah, no, this is not good enough, Dad. I'm like, all right, thanks. Also, federal agents put a halt to a plot to attack the UFC event at the White House that took place on Sunday. According to a multi-state investigation, investigators say there were conspirators, around 23 people involved in this plot, that were going to fly explosive-laden drones over the event and then use snipers to target people running away in the area.
Wow.
Obviously, there were thousands of people there. President Donald Trump was there. Other prominent figures were there. Celebrities were there. And officials said they were able to put a stop to this before it ever started.
And you got to figure that because this has been talked about, it was talked about, they showed the building of the cage, the octagon, mm-hmm. all that the
well, you couldn't miss the thing.
Exactly. And so, law enforcement was going to be on top of it even more than they would normally be.
Sure.
And checking out internet, checking out places, seeing who's doing what. So they were all in, I'm sure, way before. And so that's why they were able to do this and to capture this before anything happened.
Yeah. And the drone issue has been a problem for
it's been a
couple of years now.
Yes.
And the concern of what these things could do.
Especially with these outdoor events.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Nearly 4 out of 10 parishes in the Archdiocese in Detroit running budget deficits. Now, this is according to an exclusive report in the Detroit News this morning. It says 39% of local parishes faced shortfalls last fiscal year. Archdiocese data reveals a combined $18 million in debt, $94 million in unfunded maintenance for aging buildings. And officials say declining attendance has directly squeezed collection plate revenues while operating costs continue to climb. Now, this financial strain is a primary driver behind a major ongoing restructuring plan, which will ultimately decide which local churches will stop holding Mass.
Yeah, and that's a shame.
It is.
It's a shame because we've seen for a lot of years people go away from religion,
mm-hmm.
and now we've seen kind of rejuvenation where people are going to church in whatever denomination that you choose, but people are trying to get back to faith.
They
to a certain degree. Younger people mm-hmm. are even trying to find faith again. And so, it comes at a bad time.
It does.
Unfortunately. 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rock your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, a spotlight the entrepreneurial, tech, and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. Many business owners have yet to adopt and deploy influencer and or creator marketing campaigns, but they should be, and many are. The Interactive Advertising Bureau estimates that the creator economy grew at about 26% year over year from last year to this year, and that's four times faster than the media industry overall. And for good reason, it's working. And now not only are businesses investing more in those campaigns, they're amplifying those campaigns by boosting them. A long-standing practice in creator and influencer marketing in which brands devote part of their media budget to juicing the performance of their influencer activity in order to achieve greater reach and greater overall success with their campaigns. As reported in Digiday.com, an online publication devoted to marketing, had this to say, brand spending on social video is accelerating rapidly, and one major contributing factor could be the practice of amplifying influencer video content on platforms like Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube by boosting these campaigns with additional funding as they're released. These boosting or amplification budgets have a wide range, starting down in the low thousands of dollars and reaching up into $5 million and more, according to one influencer expert. And now it's not just an afterthought, it's actually integrated into the campaign itself, says Olivia Cripps, global paid media director at influencer and social media agency Billion Dollar Boy. She highlighted two global retail clients who have increased their budgets by 79% and 253%, respectively, underscoring the effectiveness of these campaigns. So if you're looking to add an effective marketing tactic to your campaigns, try influencer or creator campaigns as they're known and set aside budget to add in order to boost these campaigns once they're proving effective. It's a tactic that's seeing more and more of the marketing department's budgets these days. And again, that's for good reason. They're working. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Well, the use of AI-generated deepfakes is expanding in political campaigns all around the country. I think it was Eric Nesbitt who released an AI video. It was about a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes long, of Gretchen Whitmer, Jocelyn Benson, Gavin Newsom, and Tim Walz sitting around a campfire.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And they were talking about how they were getting away with all this stuff. And then Mike Rogers comes out of the woods and he turns into the Hulk. And and they're running away, and Eric Nesbitt's driving in on a tractor. Okay, obviously fake.
Of course, oh, yeah.
Right, obviously
sure,
fake. Sure. But some of these deep fakes are more realistic. And it's becoming more difficult for voters, for you, to identify what's real, what's fake, and how that is, you know, fundamentally changing the way people look at candidates. Cliff Lampe is a professor of information and associate dean for academic affairs for the School of Information at the University of Michigan and joins us this morning. Professor, it's good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit about this. How realistically can people decipher between a real campaign ad and a convincing deepfake video?
At a certain level, it's very hard to tell the difference. And the more subtle the change they make, the harder it is to tell. So turning into the Hulk is an obvious change,
sure,
right? But making somebody thinner or fatter or darker or more subtle changes are very hard to detect.
And, you know, what's striking, Cliff, is that this just isn't a Republican or Democratic issue. I mean, candidates across the political spectrum are kind of using AI. And does that suggest that we cross this threshold where, you know, campaigns feel that they can't afford not to use it?
I think it's a couple of things. I think it's probably that it's a bit of an arms race. If the opposition's going to use it, we'd better use it. It's also a lot cheaper in some ways than other media production. And so if you're a cash-strapped campaign, it seems like an easy way to create content.
It does seem like it would lend to this idea of an erosion of trust, but I don't know that voters have that type of mindset. They generally, in some cases, have shorter memories here. So what's the biggest risk for a campaign using this type of technology?
The biggest risk probably is that they go too far, that it does something that alienates voters. I don't know that, there are many people with negative views of AI, so that if you're putting out what people call AI slop, then it can turn people against your campaign if you're seen as being too friendly with AI, maybe.
You know, a lot of these ads include no disclosure that AI was used. I mean, should campaigns be required to let voters know when these images and videos or audio have been, you know, artificially generated?
A lot of states around the country are working on legislation just like that, where campaigns have to notify if AI was used to generate content for a political campaign. There's some movement on that in Michigan, but that's going to be a state-by-state issue.
Again, I mentioned the Eric Nesbitt ad. There was a disclaimer on that video that it said that this was generated using AI. But to Lloyd's point and to your point, the laws that some of these states are currently examining and whether or not they'll pass for this type of regulation, is there anything at the federal level that would keep this in check? The FCC, for example?
Not really, both because I think the current vibe is to not regulate AI as much at the federal level, but also if it's especially related to elections, most elections are legally managed at the state level, not at the federal level.
Mm. I'm wondering too, you know, how do traditional media outlets and journalists adapt when, you know, these political campaigns can manufacture these realistic content faster than a lot of times reporters can verify it?
I think there's two concerns there. One is, you know, does it fool people, right? Do you look at an AI thing and think, oh, this is real? And we see that happening all the time. Lots of people look at AI and don't necessarily have the AI literacy to say this is a fake ad. And it's causing a lot of confusion in that way. The other danger here is that everybody thinks everything is AI, so there's no such thing as truth anymore, right? And maybe a bad actor can claim, oh, that was AI, even if they're caught on video, or that a campaign gets caught in some sort of bad action, and all they do is they claim it was an AI hoax. So with people not being able to really detect often what is AI and what is not, that degrades the very idea of truth itself.
Cliff Lampe, the professor of information at the University of Michigan, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you much.
Yeah, you got it. Does this bother you if a candidate that you are supporting or would potentially support if they use artificial intelligence and deep fake videos in this way? 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. I think that's the inevitability to some degree.
Sure.
Right? It's become part of the arsenal that a campaign would have.
Yes.
And to Cliff Lampe's point, maybe cheaper.
It's cheaper. It's inexpensive.
Right.
And if you don't have much money, you do what you can to try to get your point across.
I do think, though, that there should be a bigger onus on voters, on us as folks that go out and go to the polls. Because you go back to when the allegations of Donald Trump and this collusion with Russia, right, which we know is not true.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that Russia did spend, and these Russian counterparts around the world, these bad actors that were putting out fake information on Hillary Clinton, for example.
Right.
And they were so obviously fake, Hillary Clinton in a hijab or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But people would buy that. Now, my contention is, if you're Russia and you're spending $100,000 to finance these types of hit jobs,
mm-hmm.
isn't it up to us to be smarter and more well-informed?
Absolutely it is.
So while no votes were changed at the voting machine,
no,
people's minds were changed before they even got there.
And social media contributes to this as well, because this stuff spreads quickly.
It's wildfire.
Yeah.
It's wildfire. And I've always made the contention of, if you are listening to this show right now, or if you listen to this show every day, you're smart.
Mm-hmm.
If you go home and you talk about issues with your wife, your husband, your family, your mom, your dad, whoever it is, you're in the know.
Yes, you know what's happening.
I'm not worried about you.
Right.
I know that when you get to the polls, that you will have researched proposal A, B, C, and D.
Yes, and
prop
the candidate.
Prop 1, 2, and 3.
And every candidate.
And you will have, done your due diligence, so you at least are making the best decision for you, who you think will best support your interests.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But then there are a lot of people who are just fringe.
Yeah, who not really paying attention, and they just see that deep fake, and it's spread, and people are talking about it because it's been spread all over social media. And
guess what? Your votes count the same.
It sure does.
So I always make the contention at this point is, you have to be a responsible voter. We have such a wonderful gift here in this country to be able to go and elect our leaders. Whether they do what you want is a whole other
ball
of wax.
That's a different story, yeah.
That's a different topic for a different day.
Yes, right.
But we have this gift, and we need to be able to, as voters, go to the polls knowing who we think we should vote for based on the good information
that
we have.
We're just in a different time now. You got to pay attention.
There's no doubt about that. The DPD chief, Todd Bettison, joins us on the new proposal for the curfew for the fireworks. It's next. So we saw what happened in Dearborn Heights as that festival needed to closed down as a result of some of these teen takeovers. Sounds like maybe there was some confusion around that.
It was a little confusing.
They might have went to the wrong place or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
But these teen takeovers are impacting cities all across the country. Detroit is not exempt from that list. Mm-hmm. And as a result, Detroit police were asking the city to temporarily restrict minors from going downtown during the Ford fireworks display that's happening on Monday.
Yeah.
And that was taken into consideration, and the council acted yesterday, so that curfew will be at 8 o'clock on the 22nd for minors.
Yes.
And you can go down to the fireworks if you got a 21-year-old with you.
Absolutely. And this is something that, you know, has happened every year. This is this curfew situation where they like to lower is not, you know, something that's just brand new. This is something that they ask every year for city council to do. I think it's getting more attention because of the teen takeovers.
Let's talk about it with the Detroit Police Chief, Todd Bettison. Chief, good morning. It's good to have you.
Hey, good morning. How are you all?
We're well. Obviously, this is something that you guys are always following. And to Lloyd's point, this is something that happens every year. Is it really just the fact that there is more attention paid to these teen takeovers at this point?
Absolutely. This is something, I mean, I got over 30 years on the department, but at least for the last 20 years, I mean, we have asked for the exact same emergency curfew on fireworks day. We draw hundreds of thousands of people downtown, and we just want to make sure that when children are down there, that they're supervised. Every year we have a lot of lost children, and, you know, it's a fun family event, but in the Detroit Police Department, we've really become just experts at managing large crowds. You look at the NFL draft, you look at the Grand Prix that we just hosted. We're good at this. In 2027, we're going to have the NCAA Final Four, and so my officers are well-trained. We work very closely with all of our local partners as well, so Michigan State Police, Wayne County Sheriff, they're assisting, and we have officers that you can see. My whole department will be working, so no off days on fireworks day, and that's just how it is.
Yeah,
and that's just what we do.
And council members were split on the vote yesterday. Some saying that this curfew protects public safety. Others saying it excludes youth from a signature Detroit event. Where do you see the balance on this, Chief?
We've been doing this for 20 years, and every year it's one or two council members that you know, it's rinse and repeat every. Every year, it's a couple council members that disagree, but the majority do agree. And overall, we've been able to keep the residents and all of our visitors safe at the Ford Fireworks. It's a great event.
It certainly is, and everybody should be able to take part in
Absolutely.
It. There's no doubt about that. What kind of work do you do collaboratively? You mentioned that your whole crew will be working on that day, but what kind of collaborative work do you do with other policing agencies to ensure that it's a safe event?
Oh, yeah, we plan for this. And so when I say it's officers and folks that you can see that you can't see, of course, we work very closely with our federal partners. And so FBI, ATF, they provide resources. We're monitoring and scrubbing social media for any credible threats to an event such as that. Like I say, other agencies dedicate resources and other equipment. And it's stuff that I'll talk about, stuff that I can't talk about.
Sure.
But just know that we have it covered, you know, from land, air, sea, all of that.
And community violence intervention groups, Chief, I know they're going to be on site during the fireworks, too. Kind of talk about the role that they play and how does that kind of change the dynamic compared to traditional enforcement alone?
Yeah, absolutely. They work in our neighborhoods, and they're a deterrent and an intervention. And so they work very closely with that 1-2% of the population that have ongoing gang disputes and beefs. And they just help individuals mitigate conflict. And so when they're there, because so many of our youth do come from the neighborhoods,
yeah,
and that's traditionally where they work. Everybody meets up downtown. And so when they see the people that they're working with, they're saying, hey, you know, come down there, have a good time, and don't regulate your emotions. And they do an excellent job of helping bridge the gap between law enforcement and folks who really don't trust law enforcement. So, you know, it's that value add. It's that and. You know, we have law enforcement, and it's going to be a heavy, heavy presence. But we also have community volunteers and community violence intervention folks that do and play their part as well. And let's not forget technology. I have cameras everywhere. So if you even think about doing something downtown, we're going to see you, we know exactly who you are. You're not going to get away with it. And we're going to hold you strictly, strictly accountable.
Mm. And, you know, just more broadly speaking with these teen takeovers, the problem is you've got a lot of kids that just want to enjoy downtown, right? They just want to enjoy the city. The weather's finally nice, People want to get out. These kids want to get out and enjoy their city. Unfortunately, then you have a couple of bad apples in the mix, people that come in from neighboring cities or just trying to start a problem. And that's where the law enforcement needs to come in, understanding that it's good to have these outlets for kids to go out and play basketball or get together or go to a barbecue.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to do your job to make sure that you're sending a message that some of the nonsense isn't going to be tolerated.
Oh, and absolutely. Detroit Police Department, we absolutely do our job. I work very closely with the courts as well. We issue tickets. We hold parents accountable and we hold youth accountable. And so we're absolutely doing that. And what I would say to you is, you notice it hasn't been a whole lot of teen takeovers in the city of Detroit. Matter of fact, you haven't seen any lately because we've been shutting it down. I mean, I do it very quietly, but the folks who try to organize it, they got the message. And so we've sent a very, very strong message in the city of Detroit. And I will say this to your listeners. We keep talking about teen takeover. It's an adult take back. And so we're not letting the teens take over anything. So
yeah, parents,
that's what I'll say. And just stay tuned. As you notice, it's not a lot. And we've had a few violent incidents, but overall, when you compare us to other large municipalities, you just haven't seen the level of violence or even the mass numbers of teen takeovers in the city of Detroit like you have. Matter of fact, you've seen them start to try to go to other places because we've been so effectively at shutting them down. I have a lot of officers, and when they even try to raise up, we're right there on top of it, scrubbing social media, so we meet them before they can even get there.
And parents play a big part in this too, Chief. I mean, the kids, you know, we don't want the kids downtown, but the parents, I mean, we can't allow them to just drop the kids off and leave and have these kids roaming the city.
That's so true. Parental responsibility is so important, and that's something we have to hold parents who are not responsible accountable. And so after they get those tickets and we engage them, that's a misdemeanor. I don't know if folks know that. It's not a civil infraction. They have to actually go before a judge, and that judge is William McConico. And if they don't show up to court, they get a bench warrant issued for their arrest, and we go out and arrest them. And so it's a lot to it. But individuals that are standing before the judge, it's things that they have to do like community service. It's a lot involved once you get cited for one of those tickets. You know, it's the fine, it's the penalties, and it can be jail time attached to it as well. And so we encourage parents, be responsible, know where your children are, because it's for their safety. Everybody knows that when you have large groups of teenagers or large groups of children or just children unsupervised, bad things can happen.
Well, we appreciate the work of all of the Detroit police officers and leadership, and obviously the work that you do to make sure everybody is safe and having a good holiday and a good fireworks. DPD Chief Todd Bettison, thank you, sir. We appreciate your time as always.
All righty, sir. Thanks.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Man. They got a tough job.
Tough job. You got to coordinate all of that.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot to do.
Right. But thankfully, you and I aren't in charge of that coordination.
No.
We got real professionals that are getting it done. Taxes on local streaming services, one lawmaker says, it's next on JR Morning. So the Michigan House approved a bill from State Representative Mike Harris. It would prohibit local governments from imposing taxes on streaming services like Netflix or Disney Plus
or
Peacock, Hulu. Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly. And the argument is that the move would keep costs down for consumers to prevent unfair fees because, you know, there are taxes to cable because there's physical infrastructure there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This, the argument is, well, there isn't any. All you do is buy a Roku and away you stream.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it as part of our Capitol report today with Representative Mike Harris. Representative, good morning. It's good to have you back.
Good morning. I love being back. How are you guys?
We're well. Let's talk about this. Where did this idea come from for you? Where was the genesis of this?
You know, this actually came up last session, and it died in lame duck. The Senate didn't take it in lame duck. And, you know, I started learning. It's a very convoluted issue. And, you know, it's kind of like pulling that little string on a sweater. It starts unraveling. And, you know, I started digging into this last session, and I've learned so much in the last couple of years. I'm like, we need to reintroduce this and get this across the finish line.
I know, because most people understand why cable companies might pay fees for using public rights of way, but why do you believe streaming services are fundamentally different?
Well, I think you guys nailed it earlier. You know, it's, this act, the current act, was created because there's a disruption to municipal services, right? Cable companies may have to tear up roads, enter into people's yards, go across municipal parks, things like that. They basically rent the use of that right away for their physical infrastructure. But you want to talk about things like, you know, Netflix or Hulu or like Dish Network, that's a satellite provider.
Right.
They don't have that same infrastructure. They're not disrupting municipal service. They just happen to send a signal through somebody else's infrastructure, similar to how we send signals for emails or YouTube or Facebook, you know, our social media accounts. All do the same thing. They send a signal that gets transmitted through somebody else's wires or fiber and end up at our homes.
So then where does this tax collection go once you tax on these streaming services? Who gets the money? Is that local governments?
So it would be the local government. So how it works right now is the cable companies basically act as a tax collector, right? These are taxes that are allowed to be passed through to the consumer, and then the cable company collects them and then gives them to the local government. They're franchise fees,
okay,
right? And so the same premise, the argument is the same premise would be held true for streaming services, where these would, you know, be collected by the streaming services and then remitted to local government that could be applied towards things. The big contentious thing is it's called PEG fees. So in these franchise fees, a portion of that is allowed to be used for things like local access television and things like that, which I think is a very valuable service, right? Mm-hmm. But the way the law is currently written, it only applies to cable.
Oh, so then my next question is, then where do you make up that lost revenue then for local municipalities that maybe have come to rely on this money? What happens then?
Sure. Well, I mean, just to kind of put it in context. So Waterford, where I'm from, back in 2014, I think they approximately $1.1 million is what they got from these franchise fees. And, you know, if we look at last year, I think they were at about a $300,000 reduction for that year. So, I mean, there has been a decline for sure in cable services. Now, that doesn't mean that we get to just willy-nilly reinterpret current statutes, right, to try and replace revenue stream because of that new interpretation. But I do agree that maybe there's a broader conversation that needs to happen on if we continue to see this decline. And I'm open to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my bill, all it does is correct what the argument is and the intent of the law. And again, we even reached out to the Michigan Public Service Commission that regulates this act, and they have for 19 years. And they even agree that this does not apply to streaming services. Mm. This current law only applies to cable. They said they've never applied it to streaming services, and they have no intention of applying it to streaming services unless there's a judicial or legislative direction to do so.
I know your bill received bipartisan support in the House, and, you know, I think, like, you know, bringing Republicans and Democrats together on this issue would be a no-brainer, because these taxes don't care if you're, you know, a Republican or a Democrat. It affects everybody.
I agree. And so, I mean, I'm from Oakland County. Elkin County averages about 5 to 6 streaming services per household. So imagine that. So you cut the cord with cable, right? And so, yes, the municipality may receive less money from your one household, but now they're going to tax you on 5 to 6 streaming services. I mean, just the back of the napkin kind of calculations on this, there's going to be a huge revenue increase, not necessarily just making up that lost $300,000.
Really interesting stuff. We're going to continue to follow it. Keep us up to date on it, will you, please?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you, guys.
You got it.
Talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's Representative Mike Harris. Thank you.
The bill now heads to the Senate, and we'll see what conversations happen over there.
Yeah, but this is, you know, again, I appreciate his candor on the idea of, okay, well, we probably should have a broader conversation mm-hmm. about the funding mechanism of this.
Right.
Look, I'm a big, try to keep as much money as you can. I don't try to let the government take as much more than they need to,
right?
Lower taxes for me.
Listen, man, people are trying to find ways to cut costs right now.
Right.
You know, looking for ways to
right.
cut
but
costs.
At the same time, then you've got the issues of, well, then your local government, which is the thing that impacts you the most on a daily basis.
Right.
Whoever the president is one thing, but mm-hmm. your day-to-day is your local government.
Your local government, that's
and,
right.
And so if they are now running on the notion of they're getting X amount of dollars from this, and all of a sudden it's gone, well,
then what's the makeup?
Well, or what suffers?
Yeah.
What don't you all of a sudden not have money for that mm-hmm. I've become accustomed to?
That's true.
Right? So that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the dichotomy. All right, we'll take a break. 8 o'clock hour coming up. Get you caught up on the headlines. A new data center report. Also, the USPBL. We got a sweet deal for you. And it's Name That Tune Day here on a Wednesday.
Tune.
It's coming up. So, as we get into the 8 o'clock hour, Donald Trump is wrapping up his G7 trip. He'll be heading to Paris today and then on his way home. And on the horizon here, Lloyd, is the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah. And
yay!
Let me tell you, it's affecting oil prices right now because oil sits at about $76 a barrel.
Yeah. Here's Donald Trump on the Strait of Hormuz this morning.
The ships are starting to move now. We're going to have it fully open by Friday. The ships are starting to move nicely. Oil is starting to go, and the prices are coming down rapidly. Stock market is going up rapidly. A lot of good things are happening.
Meanwhile, the UN is reporting significantly reduced violence in southern Lebanon. That obviously is welcome news as this deal is on the table mm-hmm. and hopefully going to be signed this week. And you have G7 leaders ready to support this move, and they are supporting the memorandum of understanding at this point. And so that's the good news here, is that we've got less fighting in Lebanon. Hopefully Benjamin Netanyahu is heeding some of that advice from Donald Trump. And we get to the point where this deal is going to make way for some sort of substantial peace. So something to continue to watch as the president wraps up the G7.
And it looks like we may have some peace downtown on fireworks night because Detroit City Council has approved a 8 p.m. fireworks curfew for teenagers. The emergency ordinance passed in a 6-2 vote and targets unaccompanied minors 17 and under during Monday's fireworks. Youth are still welcome at designated viewing areas like Hart Plaza and Belle Isle and the waterfront, but only if accompanied by an adult age 21 or older. And Detroit police say the measure is strictly for safety following past instances of gun violence. And minors caught violating the curfew, they're going to be taken to a recreation center, and their parents will face a $250 fine. And so it's not just the Detroit police, but Wayne County Sheriff, State Police, all working together. There'll be, you know, plain clothes. There'll be uniform police. Nobody gets the day off.
Nobody gets the day off
on fireworks night. And so it's going to be very safe downtown. You need to come down if you can and enjoy it. And we're going to be carrying it. And Paul W. Smith is going to do a show prior to fireworks. And then during the fireworks, you know, the fireworks are coordinated with music.
Mm-hmm.
We will have that music. So even if you can't get downtown, if you want to just maybe come to New Center and look, you can see the fireworks.
No doubt.
You could see the fireworks. If you just want to park here in New Center and just turn on the music that accompanies, you got the whole deal.
That's pretty cool.
And then you can just jump on the freeway and get on without the crowd.
Exactly right. Meanwhile, federal agents disrupted that alleged plot targeting the high-profile UFC event last Sunday at the White House. FBI and Secret Service investigators say that 23 people were involved in this coordinated multi-state plot, which would have seen explosive-laden drones fly over the vent, drop them, and then snipers in other areas target people who were fleeing the area.
Wow. You got to be careful. These drones, man, it's a different type of day now, you know?
Well, it's a type of, yeah, I mean, it's a type of situation that, you know, organizations like the NFL have been warning about for years, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we're at Lambeau Field. We got a wide open stadium.
Yeah.
What's preventing a drone from flying in and causing major damage?
Oh, you got a concert at a Absolutely. Baseball.
Sure.
You know, and a drone flies in or
Absolutely.
Something.
Yeah. Absolutely. It would be incredibly dangerous. So that's something that they've been looking at for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you talk about what this event, you know, and the thousands of people that were there and what this could have done, I mean, J.D. Vance talked a little bit about it.
This is very, very dark stuff. And unfortunately, we're talking about this a little bit off camera, but this is what happens when people turn the rhetoric up so loud that disagreeing with somebody is a cause for violence. That's the place that we've come to, unfortunately, with too much of our political rhetoric. We got to tell everybody to tone it down.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, across the board, you just can't have that, no. that going on.
Thousands of Michiganders are still waiting on state tax refunds as lawmakers and Lansing press treasury officials over the backlog that has left some taxpayers waiting months for their money. At a House Oversight Committee hearing, officials said the delays are tied to Michigan's transition away from a decades-old computer system to a modern platform. And while the state says about 95% of more than 5 million returns have been processed, the remaining cases include hundreds of thousands still unresolved. Treasury leaders say many delayed returns involve identity checks or filing discrepancies, and a new phone system is expected next month. But lawmakers are frustrated, and taxpayers say the bigger issue is the lack of clear timelines and communication on when refunds will arrive.
Mm.
Here it is, June. You still have people who are looking for their state refund.
Yeah, that's not.
I mean.
What are we doing?
I know you're going through a transit, going through new, but come on.
Get people their money. If they got a refund, get people their money.
Money.
Absolutely.
Yes.
By the way, J.D. Vance has a book coming out. Communion,
yes.
is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
And he was on, he's been making the rounds.
And not afraid to go anywhere, is he?
He was not afraid to go on The View.
Yeah.
The View.
The View.
J.D. Vance was on The View. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
You're killing me, Smalls.
And look, they pressed him on a number sure. of issues, obviously. I thought he did a nice job.
He did. No, he did.
I mean, I thought he wasn't, overly combative.
Nope.
I thought he did a really nice job. They did ask him, though, about remember the childless cat lady?
Oh, yeah.
Comment. They did ask him about that. I just wanted to play you a little bit of this. Here's what he had to say.
So in the book, Mr. Vice President, you make a mea culpa of sorts for calling Democrats childless cat ladies.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm not a boneheaded comment.
You say that in the book, that it was boneheaded, which it was.
Thank you.
What were you thinking when you said that?
So Joy said when we were off air that I'm fine, which I think is about the best endorsement that I'm going to get out of Joy Behar
for a
Republican. Thank you. I appreciate that. Graded on a curve here at The View. But, you know, I guess one of the things that I try to do, and I'm always, you know, all of us are always learning. You know, you said you were a lapsed Catholic. I'm a bad Catholic. I think all of us, that's why we need grace as Christians, is because we recognize that there are certain things we got to work on.
Right.
But here's what I'd say about that. So did that comment actually shed light on something and start a discussion, or did it just close people down? And when I make a comment that just closes people down, instead of trying to appreciate the point that I make, that's a mistake.
Do you know how refreshing that is
mm-hmm.
to hear?
Yeah.
Now, maybe you're cynical and you say, well, J.D. Vance is just trying to sell books or whatever it is.
Right.
That's fine. But very rarely do we hear from our political leaders go, my bad, I made a
yep,
mistake.
Yeah, that was a bonehead mistake. He says it himself.
I mean, that is utterly refreshing to me.
You know, every now and then.
And we need more of that.
We need a lot
and
more
And not
of that.
Just from Republicans, from Democrats
no.
across the board.
Everybody. Everybody.
My bad. Made a mistake. Boneheaded
and it's okay,
mistake.
Because we are human, we make mistakes.
Well, he's writing a book about faith and religion, and you know sometimes you falter. And okay,
exactly.
But like, that's the point. Is and yes, it was contentious, and of course he went on to support Donald Trump and the things that the administration is doing. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
but it just felt like for a moment, in a political world of craziness,
yes.
that it was refreshing for at least somebody to go like, yeah, I missed the mark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
It is.
People, I look at somebody it like is. That and go, yes.
Yeah.
I gravitate towards that
mm-hmm.
because we all make mistakes.
Of course, we're not perfect.
But I mean, my goodness, can we just, a little more of that humility would be welcomed at this point. Coming up on the other side, Eric Lufer with the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. They've released a comprehensive view on data centers. We'll get his perspective on what that means for Michigan, whether we should give it the thumbs up or the thumb down. That's coming up next. You know, Michigan summers mean outdoor adventure and fun for you and the whole family, but temperatures that reach high should not break your budget. Count on Consumers Energy to help make the most of this season and your budget with tips to help you save money, making small changes like shifting some energy use to the morning or the evening, raising your thermostat just a couple of degrees, or doing laundry at night or on the weekends. All these things can help keep your bill lower and keep your home comfortable. So discover more ways to beat the heat at consumersenergy.com/summer. So the Citizens Research Council of Michigan has released their comprehensive evaluation of data centers and kind of the risk rewards of all of it. And one of the things that they find is that while large-scale, hyperscale facilities should be scrutinized, there should be some sort of oversight of them, like how much power they're using, how much water they use. Mm-hmm. Are they using the recycling system? Or are they drawing from fresh water every single use? How loud are they? All of these things should be taken into effect, and they should certainly be regulated to some degree. But some of these data centers aren't mega centers. Some of them are smaller.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know, you might just think it's a, you know, a business park.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all of these things have come out, pluses and minuses to all of that. It was all part of this report that was released. Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan and joins us once again this morning. Eric, it's good to have you back.
I'm always happy to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about it. What went into the evaluation of this report when it comes to the pluses and minuses to having these data centers here in the state of Michigan? What did you find?
Yeah, so data centers have really become the boogeyman in the court of public opinion, and there's a lot of perceptions of them. So we've tried to dig into each of those issues, as you said, the power, the water, the noise issues, things like that, and really get down to the facts, really follow the facts to understand what's happened in other places, look at it in the Michigan context, the fact that we're an industrial state surrounded by a lot of water. We've lost a lot of industry that's created excess capacity for our electric companies. The fact that we're closing power plants is freeing up a lot of water use that we're actually using less water now than we were 6 years ago. So just following the facts and trying to provide an understanding for everyone so that we can still agree to disagree on whether they're good or bad, whether they're helpful for Michigan's economy or not. But let's start with a basic understanding of what happens with them, what resources do they draw upon, and how will that affect us?
Eric, your findings suggest that Michigan may actually be well positioned for this kind of development compared to other states. What advantages does the state have that kind of make it more resilient than other people realize?
Yeah, and part of it, as I said, the fact that we have not been growing as much as other states. We have lost industry. We're closing power plants. We're doing a lot of things. So, you know, at its root, data centers are light industry. Michigan knows industry better than any other state in the nation. We're well equipped to deal with this. We have, you know, we don't want to put them next to a residential area.
You're right.
But we have lots of industrial parks, a lot of places we could put these data centers. The fact that we have lost industry means that the power plants have excess capacity. They don't need to build more power plants, at least in the short term, to deal with the data centers that are coming in. We're surrounded by water. It depends on the facility. They have what they call open circulation, where they're just drawing water and it's cooling it, and then most of it evaporates, but some of it goes right back into the water system. They have closed loop. It's like a radiator that the water just circulates, and that doesn't draw much water at all. we can certainly deal with that here in Michigan. And the noise issue, again, it's like, let's be careful where we put them. But this is Michigan. We deal with industry, whether that's a auto supplier or some sort of stamping plant, whatever. We have industry in Michigan. We're good at this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what gets lost in the fray is it's something new coming in. And so that, I think, is what puts people a little bit on ice, and they're slipping around on whether or not this is something they think is a good thing or not. But at the end of the day, it's the local municipalities that are going to have the biggest trade-offs here. And I think that was one of the things that I took most out of this report is, yes, there's going to be a tax revenue benefit for these communities, but then you are going to have to deal with zoning concern. There is going to be infrastructure demands that these facilities are going to bring along with it. And how big of a direct employment benefit will there actually be? So there's pluses and minuses to this for local governments, right, at least.
Yeah, this is kind of the paradigm shift that we're still trying to wrap our arms around. Usually when we talk about this sort of economic development is, what are we giving up and what are we getting in return? And usually in return, it's a lot of employment. People working on the line, putting in the 8-hour day, putting their kids through school and everything. Data centers are capital intensive. They're not labor intensive. Mm-hmm. At best in these hyperscale facilities, 100, give or take, depends on the facility. That's long-term employment. It's good paying jobs, not great paying jobs, good paying jobs. So it's really about investment in the community. Michigan's, we're not growing a lot, so let's be careful what we're turning away here. We need people to invest in Michigan. Mm-hmm. We need that type of investment. When we look at the Saline Park, it's going to affect Saline Township, obviously, but Washtenaw County, the school system, the park system, a lot of local governments will benefit. They just announced the one in Van Buren Township that's going to help all of Wayne County. It's going to help the Wayne Risa School District. It's going to help a lot of communities grow the tax base. We need to grow the tax base to provide services, to provide quality of life for our residents.
Well, and yeah, there's a lot more we could get to on this. It's a really excellent report. I would urge people to check it out. Eric Lufer, the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan, thank you for your time. Thanks for putting this together. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and if people want to look for it, we're at crcmich.org, crcmich.org.
Yeah, very right. Good. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. I think he's right, too. You get that employment benefit, mm-hmm, right up front of these, as these things are constructed. Mm-hmm. And on the back end, not so much. But then, is Michigan a bigger destination for other development, for other jobs that could come in as a result of this?
And I think the real challenge here is not really infrastructure capacity. It's really public trust and communication.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
We got a sweet deal coming up on the other side. And boy, is it a good one. We'll tell you about it. Coming up, it's JR Morning.
The world around you. Izervay or avacincaptad pegol is an eye injection. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may cause blood in the white of the eye, blurred vision, or a temporary increase in eye pressure. Do not drive or use machinery until vision has recovered after an eye injection or exam. Ask your retina specialist how you can slow your GA with Izervay. To learn more, call 1-855-IZERVAY or go to izervay.com. Paid for by Astellas Pharma.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump will take questions at a news conference later this morning to discuss the peace deal with Iran. But during a sit-down with the president of Egypt, the president gave a preview.
They will never have a nuclear weapon, so that's very, very strong.
Fox's Peter Ducey at the summit.
In this meeting, he was talking about how if they didn't make a deal right now, there would be a global depression, which speaks to the economic pressure President Trump and his team have been feeling back home, especially with high gas prices.
Oil holding around $76 a barrel, the lowest in 3 months. Alabama Congressman Barry Moore, endorsed by President Trump, raced to victory in the Republican primary to fill the Senate seat of Tommy Tuberville, who is running for governor against former Democratic Senator Doug Jones. An interest rate decision, 2 p.m. today, Eastern Time, from the Federal Reserve. America's listening to Fox News.
WJR, traffic and weather first. This report is sponsored by rockauto.com.
Oh, that grinding and squealing. What are you going to do about that?
Time for new brakes. The chain store never has what I need.
No worries. Go to rockauto.com for name brands at lower prices. All the parts your car will
ever need, rockauto. Lapeer Road remains closed this morning southbound between Thomas and Oakwood due to an accident. Traffic stop from West Davis and Lake Road. Eastbound M14 at Sheldon, a crash off to the right shoulder. Traffic slow from Beck Road. Eastbound 94 at Hagerty. A disabled vehicle is taking up the left lane there. Now, WJR weather first from the Weather Channel, sponsored by Lombardo Apartments. Searching for a luxury two- or three-bedroom townhome? Kirkway Apartments in Washington Township features beautiful luxury townhomes designed for comfort, convenience, and style. Visit KirkwayApartments.com for more information on their specials, including up to 1 month free rent on a new lease. Partly cloudy this morning. Possible severe thunderstorms move in this afternoon, a high of 74. Right now, it's 60. Scattered thunderstorms tonight with a low of 60. Partly cloudy. Cooler tomorrow, high 71. I'm Renee Vitale, WJR, traffic and weather first.
One in four Americans have a disability. I'm one of them. I'm also a working mom who cares deeply about making sure every child with a disability thrives by getting their access needs met. We've got a trusted ally by our side. Easter Seals provides children and families the foundation for lifelong success through early learning programs, skills training, and prep for college and career. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours. Join us at EasterSeals.com.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
The Rocket Classic returns July 30th through August 2nd at the historic Detroit Golf Club. Tickets are selling fast. This is the one you want to show up for, because at the Classic, you're right there, up against the action, along the fairways and greens of a beautifully restored course. It's world-class golf, remixed with music, food, and the soul of Detroit. The Rocket Classic, presented by Alumnify, undeniably Detroit. Grab tickets while they last at rocketclassic.com.
I'm Eric Reno, owner of Paramount Roofing. We've protected thousands of homes, and right now, there has never been a better time to replace your roof.
Ryan Armani here, and Eric is not kidding. Paramount's biggest way to save means no money down and 0% interest for 5 full years. New roof, no catch.
Get a free estimate at weareroofing.com. That's weareroofing.com.
Paramount Roofing, built to last, backed for life.
America 250, Michigan made.
Two cousins, one white, one black. Same bloodline, but living in two very different Americas. Fast forward to 1959. One cousin launches Motown Records in Detroit with an $800 loan. The Supremes, The Temptations, Marvin Gaye, and Stevie Wonder create the sound of young America. Motown breaks down barriers, tops the charts, and unites a divided nation through music. The other cousin, he becomes president of the United States in America's bicentennial, 1976. Berry Gordy and Jimmy Carter, second cousins who helped shape American culture in profound ways. From that little house on West Grand Boulevard, Michigan's own Motown proves that great music transcends every boundary.
America 250, Michigan made. From 760 WJR. Stay here for All Talk with Kevin Dietz at 9. Now back to JR Morning with Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds on WJR, where Michigan comes to talk.
Well, I'll tell you, if you haven't gone down and seen a game with the United States Professional Baseball League, the USPBL. You got to. It is absolutely fantastic. It is a great, great product. And it's very, very affordable. Like, for example, $60 will get you four tickets, four hot dogs, four soft drinks. That's a huge value.
That's nice value, man. Family?
When things are expensive these days. Well, why don't we make it a little cheaper?
We could do one better, can't we?
We got a sweet deal for you today. And Dana Schmidt, the president of the USPBL, joins us to talk about it. Dana, good morning. It's good to have you.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the league. And if people haven't been down there, first of all, the facilities are absolutely stellar.
Love the ballpark.
And the players, the teams, I mean, it is such a fun atmosphere to go see baseball.
It is. There's something for everybody. And, you know, it used to be Jimmy John's Field. Now it's UWM Field. So that's just a little change for everybody to get used to. But we have four teams that play out of our league, and it's a developmental league for guys who didn't get drafted, but they're really great players. And, you know, the rounds of draft has decreased over the years, so there's a lot of great players that don't get drafted. And these guys are still trying to make it, and we've had, so from a baseball perspective, the baseball is really good. We've had 53 players signed out of our league by major league organizations, and seven of those players have made it all the way through the affiliated minor league system to play on a major league roster. So the baseball is fantastic. But on top of that, we have a wonderful family-friendly experience at the ballpark and fireworks after every Friday game. Kids run the bases after every game. We have free parking. And it's just a super fun experience for families.
I just think, too, I mean, it's a great place if you want to take the, you know, family out, you know, maybe a date night or maybe a work event. You know, that's the place to go.
Well, we have that's about work events. That's a huge part of what we do is we have summer picnics and we actually have 26 suites as well. So it's a great place for corporate entertaining as well as just a family coming out to the game. And we do a ton of corporate entertaining or church group outings, Little League group outings. So that's a huge part of what we do is group outings for people that are looking for an affordable way to entertain or entertain their employees or their clients. So, it's something that it's a great facility. We put in a new synthetic turf field. So, you know, we don't have issues with rainouts like we used to because we've got a great new field that can withstand all of that. And, you know, we have things like we have a bat dog named JJ. He picks up the bat. It's a great experience. And everybody that comes, if you haven't been there before, their reaction is always the same. It's so much nicer than I thought it was going to be. I'm not sure if people think it's just bleacher seats, but it's just like a major league stadium in terms of the seating, the amenities, concessions. We have great food and beverage options throughout the ballpark. So it kind of feels like you're going to a major league experience, but probably just, I would say, a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, and you actually are dropping it even further for our listeners as well as part of our WJR Sweet Deal today. Tell us what you're offering our listeners.
We have a new family fun pack that is at $48. That is a new package that if they go online, it is just $48 for that grandstand ticket.
Yep.
The hot dog and the drink.
Very cool. And then also on our website today, that $60 pack at four tickets, four hot dogs, four drinks, it comes down to $30 as well. So, I mean, again, the value is there. That gets online at 9 o'clock this morning. So you can go to WJR.com, click on the sweet deals, and it's right there for you. So, again, just making it more affordable for people. And for those that haven't been out there, getting, you know, folks out for the first time, not only is it affordable, but then the product is so good.
Yes.
The repeat attendees will be there because
they'll come back
because you talked about the renovations to the stadium, things like that. It's just such a great experience.
Well, it is a great experience. And this week we have our Thirsty Thursday tomorrow, but it's also Jimmy Buffett night. So we have a giveaway tomorrow night. That's a really cool, like a Hawaiian shirt for the first 500 people through the gates. Mm-hmm. And then Friday, of course, we have our post-game fireworks. Saturday is our scout night. So we actually have a camp out on the field for all the scouts. After the game, they're going to be staying overnight. And then, of course, we've got Father's Day. We have a Father's Day buffet, actually, on Sunday that is a pretty hot ticket right now. So if you go to USPBL.com, in addition to your website and that deal, yes, you're correct about your deal. I forgot about that. But if you go to our website, you can see all of the promotions for all of the different upcoming games. So USPBL.com.
And these games are every Thursday through Sunday, correct?
Every Thursday through Sunday, we have games. And we coming up too, for the heading into the fourth, we have fireworks on both Friday, July 3rd and Saturday, July 4th.
Excellent.
Awesome. Dana Schmidt, the president of the USPBL, the United States Professional Baseball League. Thank you for all the work you do, all the work your team does. Andy Appleby, obviously, all the work that gets done to put on such a fantastic product. Thank you for your time and helping folks out with this deal. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, you got